Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jarovich. One of the yearly highlights of Columbus is the annual arts festival in June. And this year will be the first one with a newly appointed president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Mitch Menchaca is at the helm now. Having spent more than 10 years as the president and CEO of GCAC, Tom Katzenmeyer stepped down from his post in 2025. Late last year, it was announced by the GCAC Board of Trustees that they had selected Mitch Menchaca as the new president and CEO. He comes to Columbus from Phoenix, where he served as the city's arts and culture director. He also has experience with symphonies, choruses, and libraries, and he joins us in the studio this hour. Welcome to All Sides, Mitch.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start with the winter that you walked into. I am so sorry. Central Ohio gave you quite a treat here. We've had a severe cold spell, a lot of snow. How are your Phoenix bones handling this?
They're handling it fine. You know, I lived in D.C. for 8 years, and we had some snow there. I remember my first year there was the snowpocalypse of 08 or 09, and I wasn't prepared and ate out of a 7-Eleven because it's all I could walk to. So I was prepared for these snowstorms, although in my interview process they did say it snows and then melts a couple of times. But as we've seen, it's a winter that we're all living in it together.
Yes, so this is one of the harsher ones. I think that, you know, if you stick around for several years, we'll have lighter winters,
I promise. Good. I'm looking forward to spring, although Phoenix is having 90 degree temperatures right now, so I would have been complaining there that it was too hot. So, you know, winter is just a hard time.
No one's ever happy. Yes.
No.
All right. So you were appointed the president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council at the end of last year. But just to back up a little bit, what drew you to apply to the position?
Sure. So I was in a similar role in Phoenix as the arts and culture director, as you mentioned, but that was embedded in city government. My department oversaw grant making for artists and arts organizations. Public art was a big piece for the Phoenix Arts and Culture Department. And I was the Kappa, if you will, of Phoenix. We owned every single building that the arts organizations were in. So I learned about HVACs, toilets, and roof leaks. And so when this opportunity came up, I knew about GCAC. Tom and I knew each other in acquaintances from our Americans for the Arts Association. And I was really thrilled about three things. One was the public investment in the arts that the city of Columbus and the county give to the arts community here. The second piece is that it was a partner with government. Mm-hmm. And the third was that it did direct programming like the Columbus Arts Festival. My department did no programming. And so it was just a nice trifecta of an opportunity.
Wow. Okay. So did you have a lot of knowledge of the Columbus art scene before you decided to apply for this top job here?
Yeah, so my time in D.C., I worked at Americans for the Arts, which is the National Arts Advocacy Organization, but it's also the Association for Arts Councils. And so actually, before I worked there, I was an emerging leader, as we all were at some point. And Ray Hanley, who was a longtime president and CEO in the early days of GCAC, was a conference mentor of mine. So I knew GCAC from that point. And then working at Americans for the Arts, I knew his successors and then also staff that were at GCAC. And so I had glimpses into the organization. And then a really good friend of mine worked at GCAC and then took over my role at Americans for the Arts when I left. Hmm. So it's a close family connection, if you will.
The art world is a small world?
It is a small world.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your background. How did you end up in an arts administration career?
Well, I am from rural Arizona. I'm from a town called Casa Grande, Arizona. It's about an hour south of Phoenix, an hour north of Tucson, right in between the two major cities. And I thank parks and recreation programs. It's where children's theater, little choirs were in. I was also born in a time when we had arts in school. So I always had a component of it, but it was high school. That's where we got to do some of the musicals like The Sound of Music, Annie, and really got to have a deeper appreciation of performance. I went to college for theater. I thought I was going to be the next Broadway star out of Casa Grande,
Arizona. Oh, so you're a theater kid.
I'm a theater kid, and we're a special kind. But 2 years into it, my best friend at the time said, I'm moving to Los Angeles, and you should come with me, and we should try this acting thing. She got jobs in set design with some of the motion picture studios. I waited tables at Denny's. So it was not quite the career I was hoping for. I did some children's theater productions, but I played a dog, like on all four in a furry costume.
Did you really?
I did. Oh. Mr. A's Amazing Maze plays, The Adventures of Nate the Great, and then Your Good Man Charlie Brown. I was Snoopy, so I did get to be on two legs.
That's a lead.
That's a lead. But I thought after the third dog, this wasn't it. So I went back to school and ended up with a liberal studies degree. We sort of put all my credits together. And then I went into the workforce and got a job at the State Humanities Council, which was my first entry point into public funding for arts and culture. Saw how boards worked, saw how a professional organization could work. But I appreciated the humanities, but my love was still the arts, and applied for a job at the State Arts Commission in Arizona. And my portfolio were tribal museums. Arizona has 23 recognized tribal communities, and so their cultural centers receive state funding through the Arts Commission. My other portfolio were small performing arts groups and then local arts councils. There were 45 of them in the state. And so that was how I got to connect with community arts development, working with individual artists. And I stayed there for about 7 years and ultimately grew into the deputy director of grants and services. The recession came in 2008, 2009, and my position was on a chopping block for state government to balance a budget. And Americans for the Arts said, we have this position that is working with local arts councils. Would you be interested? And I said, live on my parents' couch or move to D.C.?
Easy choice.
I went to D.C. for that snowpocalypse that I was talking about earlier. I had a great time in D.C., and I had a mentor there who was the deputy chair of the National Endowment for the Arts. And she said, you know, you're doing great work, but if you're ever wanting to get to the next level, that executive director, that C-suite level, you need to get out of the programmatic roles. So look for something in your next job opportunity. And I took that to heart and interviewed and applied for a chief operating officer position at an association called Chorus America, the National Association for Choirs, and got the job. It was a great learning experience, did the audit, HR, did a kitchen build out, but said, this is not my this is not my passion.
Are you a singer?
I like to sing. I sing well in a choir.
Got it.
We get to blend together. And I had a desire to go back west. My father was ailing, and I had a board member at Chorus America that said, oh, we have an association of orchestras in California that is needing a new executive director. Would you be interested? We need somebody who's got some new ideas, new energy in the association world. I said, sure. So I moved to California, worked with 200 orchestras across the state. Every community had one. And what I loved about it is there was a connection between those orchestras and arts councils, because each town also had an arts council. So I was able to activate this network of orchestra leaders and did that for 3 years, did their strategic plan, got to connect with people. And then the city of Phoenix contacted me and said, you've applied for this job a couple times to be the arts and culture director. Are you interested? There's an opening. I threw my hat in the ring, went through a very rigorous process, and did the and loved it. I was back at home with family, and had some great wins. We doubled our grant making program, had the largest public art budget in the past 10 years of that experience. But working for city government is a little bit different. I was the sixth director in a 10-year period, because they used it sort of as a training ground. If they saw something in a city employee, they say, well, you go run arts and culture, and then we'll see if you can be an executive and go run something else.
Interesting.
So when I was there, the questions from city management were like, well, what do you want to do next?
Oh, they were preparing to make you city manager and put you in charge of all the water or utilities something.
Go be in charge of public works or something. Yeah. And I said, so it was a crossroad. Am I a public servant, or am I a arts person that wants to serve the public? And so when this GCAC opportunity came up, I said, I think this is the divine intervention saying it's the one path, not that there's nothing wrong with running public works, but it's just probably not in my future.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're getting to know the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Mitch Menchaca. So prior to arriving in Columbus, as you just said, you were called the Arts and Culture Director of the City of Phoenix. Phoenix is a very different city than Columbus. But are there any ideas or programs or anything that you had in Phoenix that you want to try here in Columbus? I know you're still getting the lay of the land, but is there anything from Phoenix that you've already brought here?
There are some ideas. Phoenix is a different city. It's 514 square miles of one city. I think that's bigger than Franklin County itself. Mm. So, but one of the things that I had to do in Phoenix was really think about geographic parity and equity of programs and services across the city. And I still bring that here. GCAC does a great job being the Greater Columbus Arts Council, but I want to focus how we can get our programs, our services, and our grant funding to a larger audience, maybe that we're not even reaching or even thinking about doing some cultural inventories of neighborhoods and other municipalities within the county, which is something I had to do in Phoenix to not just come in and be like, hi, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, but to say, like, what makes this neighborhood tick? What kind of arts activities are already happening? And how can we be a value added or a connector or a convener or a resource? So that's one piece. And then the other is the Greater Columbus Arts Council adopted a public art strategy last year.
Mm-hmm.
To move public art forward in Columbus. I was amazed that Columbus and the region didn't have a formal public art program. You come here, you see public art everywhere in the Central Ohio area. In fact, I found the Janet Eckelman piece, The Current, on Gay and High.
Yeah.
Because Phoenix has one. And we have a Janet Eckelman piece, so I found it. And then I was like, what is this neighborhood? It's thriving. It's great. This is where I'm going to live if I get this job. So I did. And I was sad when they took the piece down for the winter and was told, oh, because of snow and ice, it becomes a hazard. And I said, well, in Phoenix, every 5 years, we have to replace it because of sun rot.
So it's either going to burn or it's going to freeze. Great.
But we want it to be beautiful.
Yes.
So I ran a what is called a percent for art program in Phoenix. So every penny of every dollar the city spends on itself has to go to public art, which sounds amazing. I had a 5-year, $25 million public art budget, but there's some restrictions. The projects had to happen at or near the capital improvement site. So, for example, we tore up a neighborhood to put a drought pipeline in the city to pump water from Lower Phoenix to Upper Phoenix. And so we received, I don't know, it was probably $750,000 of public art funds. So we did some nice sound walls and some, you know, streetscape, which
but
is
not
beautiful.
The exact spot you wanted to put
yes,
it, maybe.
I wanted to go to those other neighborhoods that potentially didn't have public art. So I'm bringing that knowledge to Columbus, and my team and board are like, what's next with the public art strategy? And I said, I need some time to strategize on the strategy because it's the beginnings of a public art program. And we have the opportunity to learn from other people and to see how we want to put our own spin on it through public investment, but also private investment. The Current on Gay and High, Jeff Edwards of Edwards Companies are the folks that did that. So I want to see how we also connect with art and private development as well.
Yeah. Oh, and we'll get more into the public art strategy in a little bit. But just before we take a break, I wanted to know if you've been working with your predecessor, Tom Katzenmeyer. He led GCAC for over a decade. Has he helped you get better acquainted with the Columbus art scene, or is he kind of letting you do your own thing?
He's been a great asset to show me around. I've learned how to do a full reception in 30 minutes with Tom, and he's been a great help to me. And again, opening those doors, being a resource. He and his wife have taken me to performances and exhibitions, and really excited to have Tom in the community. He's going to serve on some boards of some of our organizations. But he's also said, you know, I don't want to step on your toes. If you want me to help you with this or that, I'm happy to be there. So he's been a great resource.
Okay. So he is retired, though. That's what I was wondering.
He is retired, but we're still going to see Tom Katzenmeyer's name out there.
Yeah. He struck me as the retired in air quotes kind of type.
That's right.
Okay. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the arts in Columbus with the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Mitch Menchaca. And after the break, we're going to talk more about funding of the arts. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. After leading the Greater Columbus Arts Council for 13 years, Tom Katzenmeyer has retired. A year-long national search has resulted in the selection of his replacement. And he is with us this hour. Mitch Menchaca is the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Thanks again for being here, Mitch.
Thanks for having me.
So since your arrival in Columbus, you've been on a listening tour. That's what I'm told. You are talking with GCAC staff, community stakeholders, funders. Are there any themes or comments, concerns that continue to come up? Have you written the same word down a bunch of times?
Yeah, the two things that rise to the top are gratefulness. The community has been really thankful for the investments that GCAC, through its funders, can do for the community. But the other word that I probably have scribbled down hundreds of times now is sustainability. How do we sustain the arts and culture sector and sustain, you know, funding and grow it for all parts of the sector? So those two, again, we're really grateful, but we also need to be more sustainable.
Okay. And the qualities that the search committee for your position listed that they were looking for in a new president were leadership abilities, nonprofit financial management, grant-making knowledge, and the ability to build strong public-private partnerships. So which of those qualities do you feel is your greatest strength?
I think it's the leadership ability is my greatest strength. I've been able to be put into many situations where you have to just hit the ground running and get the team to rally with you. And it's not just about me. It's about the group to be in service of something. For almost a year in 2024, I served as the interim library director in Phoenix.
I read that. I wanted to ask you about that. So the library director left and they were like, you do this.
Yeah, the city librarian left after I think she had been there 20 years. And the way we do it in Phoenix is that they then put another department head in to fill. Usually that department head gets to just focus on that new assignment for a while. I'd do both. But it was really great to see how libraries move the community forward as third spaces, literary houses, but also the other economic development programs and services. And in that, Phoenix is one of the hottest cities on the planet. And we had to do a heat relief project where the Central Library was going to be a 24-hour respite. It was the first time it was going to be part of the heat plan. And so I had to rally a team of library professionals to figure out how we were going to work with Office of Homeless Solutions, the Office of Heat Mitigation, and Phoenix PD to make that respite happen without interrupting services at the library. So it was a very big test of my leadership abilities in that, but loved every minute of it and have a new, deeper appreciation for the libraries.
So GCAC did have to deal with some funding cuts over the past year. This happened before you got here, but some of the money that usually comes from Franklin County did not come in because the county had cuts at the state and federal level. And so there was a loss of about $4 million for GCAC. It resulted in the closing of two grant programs. Some staff and admin cuts were made. Now, I know this happened before you took the job, but have people talked to you about the loss of this money and the loss of these programs?
Yes. So my first in-person interview was not sunshine and rainbows, but it was real upbeat. The second in-person interview was we lost county funding and the City-County Funding Review Advisory Committee was being formed to meet to talk about future funding. And definitely the community is reeling with it. We, especially artists, we had to close an artist grant program that, you know, we promised two cycles. So some artists said, I'm not ready to prepare my application the first round, thinking there's a second, and then there's not. So their projects are having to wait until now when we opened our new round for the new fiscal year. What's interesting is that we put city and county money together and just created a strategy to fund organizations, artists, and programs countywide. And when I came in, I had to say, well, if we're not receiving county money, then I feel like we have to use the city funds for the city of Columbus.
Mm.
And so we're not discounting artists that may reside out of the city of Columbus, because Columbus can be expensive for some individuals. And so we don't want to penalize, but the activations have to happen in Columbus. So we're not funding countywide, but everything has to be benefits to the residents and the visitors of Columbus. And I did have conversations with County Administrator Ken Wilson and some of our county commissioners about what new funding would look like and how we can impact the other 54 townships, municipalities, and villages that are in Franklin County. That's not the same as just sprinkling more money on top of everyone. How can we think about activating a local arts network with other arts councils in those communities? How can we think about artist training, workforce development? So if an investment comes, it won't be the same, but again, we'll have some ability to really make impact in that countywide funding space in a different way.
That's interesting. Did the people you met with Franklin County make it seem like this loss of money was going to continue? Or because when they announced it, it made it seem like it was just a 1 year little hiccup.
It was a 1 year pause. We never pressed play again. It does sound like we are in talks about being in the county budget for this year. At the level, not sure, but we will take their investment, we will be good stewards of it, and we will make sure to create impact in countywide programming as best as we can. And, you know, every dollar of public funding, you get a $13 return. So we'll make magic happen with what we get from the county.
How do you think funding is looking besides this county money? How do you think funding is looking for the rest of 2026? Because I know you can never really predict. GCAC is funded through certain taxes, and you can never predict the ticket tax or the bed tax. You can never really predict how many people are going to do the things to make the money.
Yeah, so we are funded through, as you mentioned, the bed tax, which is
hotels.
From beds and heads, hotels and motels, and we receive about 20% of that. The rest of it goes to Experience Columbus, the Convention Center, and then some other nonprofit organizations. And that's actually the best sustainable funding, because you can trend that. You can look at 5 years and say, okay, these marches all sort of have a trend that we can say in March we're going to earn X amount of dollars. The ticket tax, which was created right before the pandemic, which puts a 5% ticket fee on various performances, exhibitions, and tickets. Not everything. It deals with the price point and a venue size. Has not been as predictable. And so we're happy to have that cherry on top, but it's not something that we could say, like, this money is going to make that sustainability effort. So the two together and with Franklin County are the trifecta for us. We also do some personal fundraising for artist programs. For the festival, we raise about half of that budget through sponsorships and individual donors, which is sometimes different when you're coming as the Greater Columbus Arts Council and corporations say, but you're a funder too. And it's a yes, but it's for a separate program that brings 500,000 people to the riverfront. So I'm hoping that in 26, we will keep the trifecta, but that Funding Review Advisory Committee is looking at how to fund tourism, arts, and health and human services, which are desperately needing funding given what's happening at the federal level. And so we want to do our part to help health and human services, but we also know that the arts add a piece of quality of life that our residents and visitors really look forward to when coming to Columbus. So how can we be part of the solution without losing that sustainability?
So I know that Franklin County would give you money until it was cut. And then the bed tax is one thing. The ticket tax is another thing. Do you have a line item within the city of Columbus budget? Or is it just that the city gives you this money from the bed tax and ticket tax and that's their contribution?
It's the contributions to the bed tax and the ticket tax.
Okay. So, but that being said, you mentioned earlier the percent for art part, which was brought up in a previous show we did about the public art strategy and how a lot of cities have a percent for art. So you said Phoenix does, right? So what would be required for that to be enacted? Does the city have to do that, the percent for art?
Yeah, if the city of Columbus wanted to go down the percent for art route, they would have to create an ordinance that would, again, put that one penny for every dollar that the city spends on itself. And we would have to work out what the mechanisms are and what capital improvement means. I've already learned it's different than Arizona statutes, mm-hmm. so they could enact that. I have had conversations with some of our city council members who say, until we can really figure out the health and human services issues, the funding review advisory committee, bed tax, ticket tax, it's probably not on the docket this year to think about another revenue stream. Mm. And I'm okay with that. In Phoenix, my budget started at zero every year. So every spring, I had to go back to mayor and council and say, this is what we did. This was our impact. Please give us at least level funding of mm-hmm. it. And in some cases, in most cases, we did. And we grew some of our budget. But they would sometimes say, well, we're going to take a 5% reduction. But don't forget, you're getting another $1 million to do public art at the airport. And it's like, that's really great. Like, we're going to do some really awesome things, but that doesn't help the artists and the arts organization. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure as these get set up that we're not robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Mm. Okay. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're getting to know the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Mitch Menchaca. So the press release that announced your arrival calls you an innovative fundraiser. All right. So can you, besides the percent for art, which we've now talked about, can you give me an example of innovative fundraising?
Sure. One of my biggest passions in my career is trying to work with artists to connect to civic issues. So in Phoenix, we're hot, as we've mentioned before. We received $1 million grant from Bloomberg Philanthropies to do temporary public art where artists were working with public art, temporary, on different materials for heat-resistant shade structures, and not just like stands with the topper on it. How could we really be innovative and think about cooling spaces in the desert? And so that money and that rigorous application process got us that funding, and I left right when the project ended, and it's becoming a model for even Bloomberg to think about. We did 9 different artist structures in 9 different public parks, so we got to do park activation. We got to work with artists in the community, and we worked with the Office of Heat Mitigation and Arizona State University on this crisis that is truly affecting the city. You know, when you get outside, it's 125 degrees, but the pavement can be 140 degrees. So
I had no idea. All right.
So just standing in these shade structures was a benefit, and you could tell with getting a heat gun on and seeing that in the shade it's 72 degrees. Mm. And so now that project is moving forward with the city's heat plan as they start to think about more shade structures in the city and not just getting the sticks with the toppers. They're starting to utilize some of those artistic concepts. And so I love being able to find ways that we're not just fundraising to like keep the lights on, but how can we fundraise for these kinds of civic issues?
I'm just making a little note here. Do not move to Phoenix.
Move to Phoenix, but stay inside in July and August.
Got it. All right. Well, I like this idea of the shade structures because they're helpful, but they're also public art. So I'm trying to think of an example of public art in Columbus. Jamie is going to be mad at me if I can't. Like, is there a public art example in Columbus that is a helpful thing that it's also public art? I don't know. Now I'm pondering. Well, I'm sure she knows.
Well, they're all helpful when you want to have an intrinsic moment on the beauty of the place. But I'll have to think about that. But I would love to find ways. I've not had an Ohio summer yet, so I don't know what I'm in store for. I hear it's a little stickier than Phoenix. So
it won't be 140, I can tell you that much. Is there another way to implement this public art strategy? We did a show on it. Jamie Goldstein came with the big book. It's quite the strategy. You know, it's very involved, very detailed. GCAC did their homework, you know, with the surveys and everything. But how do we implement it without that percent for art part? Because we need the money.
Yeah, so I think it's working with city, county, and other municipalities on the public side to say, are there projects in the hopper? Right now, we're working with the Department of Development, the Mayor's Office and City Council, and the Mothers of Murdered Columbus Children's Organization on a memorial to memorialize those children that have been lost to violence in our community. And so that's just coming from
the city. Oh, I didn't know about that. Where is that going?
It's going to go in the Scioto Mile.
Okay.
And we're working working on it now. We just went through the artist selection process. We have the five finalists that are going to do renderings for it. And so that's just an investment the city's making. Mm. And so we're happy to help with those processes. But I think we're still going to have to develop an art plan of like 5 years to understand where those projects could come from outside of Percent for Art, or if there was a Percent for Art ordinance. But also with art and private development, as new buildings are popping up all over, I think another 200,000 people are moving to downtown Columbus in the next 5 years. How can we work with those developers to say, we want you to do it? You may not know the know-how, but we can run the process for you. We can help you suggest what a budget is so that you can integrate into the infrastructure of your building and not just let it be an add-on afterwards or silver whirly-durlies you bought from online. Like, how can you think about bringing an artist into the project fully? So I think there's multiple ways that we can do it. We're doing some work with CODA as they're going to start doing more with the rapid bus lines. So how can we make those bus stops even more enjoyable for those waiting for the bus? So I think there's different ways to do it outside of a dedicated funding stream, but it makes it a whole lot more impactful with one.
Public art bus stops. There we go. Yeah. That could be like your shade structures.
That's right.
Yes. Whenever the public art strategy was talked about, whenever the surveys first started coming out, I can remember one of the survey questions was asking about whether Columbus needed a landmark art piece or something like that, or if that would work in this city, thinking about like the Bean in Chicago or something like the Big Arch in St. Louis, like a tourist attraction kind of public artwork. What do you think about that?
I think iconicism is really great for communities. As we mentioned, Phoenix has that Janet Echelman net piece, which is that for the community of Phoenix. But it has to happen over time. The Bean, the Arch, those didn't just happen. Like, they didn't say, like, we're going to make this and this is going to be the iconic thing. Mm. It happened with residents and visitors really taking the interest and the community deeming that it was the iconic public art piece. So if you just say, like, oh, we're going to build something.
We're going to build a bean. I don't think they said we're going to build a bean. Yeah.
But if we build something, hopefully that will be it. Mm-hmm. You don't know.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in that big gavel on Front Street. You know, it's the largest gavel in the nation. And I know it's funny to some, but, you know, the community can rally behind things. And the current net piece is another iconicism, but the Bean, the Arch, the net in Phoenix, that took time for people to say that public art piece. When I think of that, I think of those towns.
I do enjoy the gavel, but when I bring people to town who have never been to Columbus before, I take them to see the deer.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get pictures with the deer. Yeah.
I saw that. I walked. My interview was at the Junto when I was interviewing, and I walked across the bridge, and I thought, what are these deer? Yeah. And I had to ask because a lot of communities, we don't have signage for these things, and that's one of the things in
the
our
deer
strategy.
Is not the name of that art piece. I know that, but we're going to just call them the deer. Yes. Yeah. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And coming up, we're going to continue our conversation with the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Mitch Menchaca. And we're going to look ahead to Mitch's first arts festival as the leader of GCAC. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And when he participated in an Ohio Arts Council panel years ago, our guest, Mitch Menchaca, had no idea or plans to move to Columbus. But he now has returned to Ohio's capital city as the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, and he joins us in the studio this hour. Thanks again for joining us today.
Excited to be here.
So tell me what was that Ohio Arts Council event that brought you to Columbus briefly, and what was your impression of the city back then at that time?
So when Donna Collins became the director of the Ohio Arts Council, she invited me to serve on a grant panel. It was a 2 or 3 day panel for the larger organizations. And we got into a van and they toured us all around the different organizations and we got to see them. I actually read GCAC's grant panel then and just really got to see the community through the lens of those arts applications and that panel process. And then I think I did it again before the pandemic. So I've been here a couple of times in those panel processes.
So you were like a jury member.
A jury member.
Like an independent person trying to decide who got money.
That's right.
Okay.
To give them their score. And actually did that for GCAC last spring before I knew that this was in the cards for me. So when I interviewed with the staff, they said, we appreciated your panel review and we thought your comments were right on. I was like, thank God.
So what did you think of your little tour of Columbus then versus now that you've lived here for a couple of months? You know, what do you think of Columbus?
Well, I can definitely see the growth in Columbus. It's probably where Phoenix was 10 years ago, where you see a lot of parking lots are now being, buildings are being erected into them. There's this vibrancy that's happening here in downtown, in the Short North, the German Village, and all over the county. The one thing that's interesting is the first time I came to Columbus, the brewery district was really happening. And now I go to the brewery, just went to Shadowbox Live last week, and I'm like, there's so many awesome buildings here, but it's really scarce on what's going on down there. And so my mind is like, what could be down here? Where did it go and who could move in? So looking to see where that neighborhood takes us, but just really see a vibrant community. And I also came in my early 20s. Friends had gone to OSU, moved to Phoenix, and so we would come and drink beer and eat Donato's pizza and watch football. So I had been there for that and got to experience an OSU-Michigan game a couple of times.
That's a national pastime here.
Right.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, you know how to do that. Great. Okay. You're all ready for the Michigan game. I saw a GCAC social media post where you are staring at like a blank wall in your office contemplating what to put on them. Do you have some artwork? Did you find some local artwork for the space?
I have some things up. That space, it's really boring. That space that I'm looking at now has a huge marker board.
Oh.
I'm really about strategizing, and I'm still a paper and marker board kind of guy. I do have some pieces up. You know, GCAC has a portable works collection, and I have a couple of pieces from our collection in there. I'm a believer in white space, so it's still, my staff is like, it's still pretty sparse in here, but
They want you to add some color.
They do. But you know what? It feels like a homey space. I can do my time there. We spend probably more time at work than we do at home. So it's getting there.
Mm. Well, a place where you could maybe purchase a few pieces of artwork would be the annual Arts Festival.
Yay.
That's my segue where I was like, decorate your office with pieces from the Arts Festival. So the Arts Festival here in Columbus is a major event for the city. And I was just wondering, had you ever attended the Arts Festival here?
No, mm-hmm. I knew about it because the platform that we use to jury artists is called Zapplication. And 15, 20 years ago, I served on the test panel for Zapplication. I was festivals are also big in Arizona, so I knew about GCAC and the platform of it, but I've not been. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm a little nervous. 500,000 people coming down to the riverfront for 3 days, but I'm really looking forward to it and saving my shekels to buy something or two for my walls.
Yes. Well, yes. It's only 500,000 people. It's only all you're in charge of them all, right? No pressure. So, but did Phoenix have like a big arts festival like we do here, one of these things?
Yeah, so the Phoenix Arts Festival is run by the Phoenix Center for the Arts, and it happens in December. Mm-hmm. We don't do any outdoor festivals in the summertime. It gets too hot. Even our Pride Festival is in October because that's when it's cooler. But we had one not on the same scale as the Columbus Arts Festival, and I would say that juring process is a little bit lighter for Phoenix. You know, it's those that want to sell their wares locally or nationally can just apply until there's no more spaces versus our process that we do a competitive call and jury, and we had 1,200 applications and had to narrow that down to 220 artists that we were going to invite. So similar but different.
Similar but different. All right. So what are you most looking forward to about the Arts Festival? Because I'm sure you've only been here for 2 months, but I'm sure you've been in Arts Festival planning meetings because Arts Festival planning is all year long. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm excited to actually see the 220 booths, and there's a prize for artists at the festival. And I heard that when you give out those awards, people start to cry and hug, and there's just that moment of joy. And so I'm excited for that. I am excited for the local talent that we bring to the performance stages. We want to make sure that while we're having national artists, that we also take care of our own. And there are emerging artists locally that get to apply to have booth space and professional development to have their first festival experience. So I'm looking forward to that. I've also been told that there are frozen drinks that I have to participate in. So I'm going to do that. But the other thing
With spirits and without.
There's both. During my work time, I will have them without. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'll have one the last day with. But the big thing is we do a fashion show. Mm. You know, Columbus is the third fashion capital of the United States. So it's New York, LA, Columbus. And so we have a lot of talent here. And we have a great fashion designer, Celeste, that puts this together. We get models from some of the big ad agencies that want to participate. And we're going to do a full-on fashion show the Friday night. And I get to MC it this year. So really thrilled about that to experience and be in it.
That's so exciting. Yeah. My husband and I go to the Arts Festival every year with our kids, and we always buy a piece from someone, you know, but you have to, it's so hard to decide, right? Because you have to, we set the rule, we buy one, right? And you have to put 200 some booths to walk through, and it's so hard to pick. It's one of my favorite events in the city. I'm excited for you to be in charge of it, even though you sound a little nervous.
Got a great team, and we have 100 volunteers that are working on it now, and then 300 more volunteers show up the day of, so it'll be in good hands.
Those videos I've seen the videos of people getting the awards, though, because the social media channel for the Arts Festival puts up a video of, like, surprising them with the award. They are amazing. Mm-hmm. So I hope that you get to do that.
Yes, get to be in the golf cart and get to travel around with it.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're getting to know the new president and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Mitch Menchaca, this hour. Based on your experience, how have you seen arts transform a community? Tell me about arts in a community and what it does.
The arts, can really transform in multiple ways. So it can beautify spaces, it can bolster economy, it can help kids succeed. Where I first got to experience that is my hometown. They had a thriving, as I mentioned early on, Parks and Rec program. The high school was really big in the arts. There was a small arts festival on Main Street. We had parades. And so there was always a sense of pride and joy of people coming to those events and activities. And as I grew in my career, especially at the State Arts Commission in Arizona, the first time I ever saw the Alvin Ailey Dance Troupe was in Safford, Arizona. It is an eastern Arizona mining community where their local arts council did a presenting series and brought it in. It was packed. They did a master class with students. You just saw vibrancy happening and excitement and wondering when the next activity was going to be, especially in smaller communities. In larger communities, I think it helps identify neighborhoods and, again, still bringing people together through beauty, through experiences, but also there's jobs in it. And I'm really thankful that I've had a career in the arts, much to the chagrin of my grandparents that wanted me to be a lawyer. I could play one on stage. But I've had this amazing career and want others to know that there's another side to arts besides performance and art making, that there's the arts management side. And I think that this town has a great program at the OSU. It's talked about at CCAD. So the educational aspect is also what can help build a community.
One of the things that was done during Tom Katzenmeyer's tenure was they created the Columbus Makes Art campaign. I mean, you see that around town all the time. What do you think of that? Are you going to keep it around?
Yeah, we're going to keep it around. I do joke with our chief strategy officer, Jamie Goldstein. I'm like, is it Columbus Makes Art or Art Makes Columbus? And she says it's both.
It's both. I was just going to say, I know it's both.
So I've actually, I love lapel pins. And when you work for the city, you get an official one. I don't work for the city, so I've got a happy face on my coat right now. But I made some Art Makes Columbus lapel pins. I'm going to a conference next week in New Orleans and want to proudly wear that because art does make Columbus, and Columbus
makes,
you know,
art.
Makes art. And so we'll definitely keep it and elevate it to maybe a 2.0. I went to the Gateway Film Center and saw a movie, and there were the ads, and I wanted to tap everyone and be like, that's the Arts Council.
That's me. That's me. Yeah. Well, if you had the lapel pin, then they would have.
If I had the lapel, I could just stick it in their face and say, Art Makes Columbus.
All right. I'll be looking for the lapel pins.
Thank you.
I know that you are just a couple months here, but have you set any year one goals?
Yeah, well, it's to keep the doors open and not step in it. Like, those are my my two big things. No, we're going to be embarking on a new strategic plan this fall. Our strategic plan ended last December, December 25, and the board graciously said, we will give you time to get into this role, meet the people, talk to the people, get through your first arts festival, and then we'll think about the next strategic plan, which will probably be a 2 to 3 year plan. I don't believe in those 5 and 10 year plans. They just sit on shelves, and especially with the economy and the new normal that we're living in. So, but that will be coming this fall, and we'll do some community listening sessions with various stakeholders. So be on the lookout for it.
Another thing that was created during Tom Katzmeyer's tenure was called the Artist Elevated Awards. Are you going to keep programs like that, the awards?
Yes, we'll definitely keep the awards. It's always great to honor artists, and a lot of our awards honor local artists, but we also honor national artists. We do artist residencies in partnership with the Columbus Museum of Art, and then we do with Sister Cities with Dresden. Mm-hmm. But we'll definitely keep Artists Elevated. It's our endowment at the Community Foundation, so it's set that people want to make donations. We also put in our own money, but yes, all of the current programs will be staying. We probably will tweak some and add some different ones, but the tried and trues will still be with us.
Oh, what do you want to add? You said it. I'm putting you on the spot. What do you want to add?
I want to get back into the arts education game. Mm-hmm. We did do a lot with arts education and young people, but a board of the past decided that our mission would focus on making sure that our funding and services went to professional artists, which is great, professional arts organizations, but we can still accomplish that through getting artists in schools, helping with getting young people into field trips. So I think there's a miss that we're having right now with arts education and with lack of funding and school issues and school budgets. How can we, again, offer a community solution to that issue and being in that space?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say that my husband is an elementary art teacher.
Yay!
So I am happy to hear you say that, as will he be. Talk to me about arts education. I mean, what kind – there's – you can define arts education as a lot. He's a visual art teacher, elementary K-5 art. So that's one type of art. But there's lots of arts education. What are you talking about, like, whenever you say you want to get into the arts education space?
Well, there's, as your husband does, in-time class work. Mm-hmm. And then there's out-of-time class work. I don't want to just glue macaroni on paper plates.
Like, heavens no.
I want to have curriculum-based arts education, whether we're working with school teachers during the day or working with our nonprofit organizations with their after-school and out-of-time school. But I still want to tie it to curriculum and standards so that it's helping reading level, it's helping math, it's helping social studies. So how can we be in that space, both in and out of the classroom space? I also like to think about it for our high school and college students. I would love to have internship opportunities, paid internship opportunities for undergraduate students to work within nonprofit arts organizations to get that lived experience, to find out if the arts are a career that they want to be in, whether they're performance or non-performance. So it does run the gambit. I do think that there was a time where we called it arts learning or arts in education, education in the arts, but I just am old school, call it arts education for the wide gambit, in school, out of time, and for our college age students as well.
Have you met with the superintendent of Columbus City Schools about this?
Just briefly at one of those 30-minute receptions, but thrilled to connect with her. People on my board have connections. I think she's got a tough job on her hands, but again, would like to come in with some solutions. But solutions also cost some money, and I don't want to add to a burden. So those new funds we're talking about, that's where some of these new projects would need to come in place. But I'm also a big person on pilots and betaing things. So if she's open for it, would love to pilot some programs within the Columbus City Schools.
Have you been on, this is unrelated to arts education, but have you been on any of the art walks that GCAC has where you can,
those are fun. They're great to get the community involved. And in fact, I just did a reel with artist Adam Hernandez, was it already last week?
Yeah.
Where we traveled around to different murals and had connections.
He is amazing. He came on the show and he told me about an art walk that is very close to where I live that I didn't even know existed. And I went on it because I was just like, how did I not know? But I didn't know.
Yeah, he does amazing work as an artist and as a videographer. And those art walks are just another opportunity that doesn't cost the community anything to be able to see the beauty that's happening. I went from downtown to Hilltop to the East Side, looking at murals that have stood the test of time over the years and in communities where you've got graffiti on one wall, the mural, then graffiti on the wall next to it. But people really understand that the arts are something sacred. And so those art walks are really great for the community to get out there and see what's around you.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming into the studio. It was wonderful to meet you. Our guest this hour has been President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Mitch Menchaca. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And I'm Amy Jurevich. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen back at our website, wosu.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. And all of our shows are available in the WOSU mobile app. Thanks for listening. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.